Welcome to the BIY Pod, a people podcast for the music business, bringing you meaningful and motivating career conversations. I'm Sylvia Gargiulo, the founder of BIY People and Talent, the people consultancy for the music business. In each episode, we'll share with you lovely listeners real career stories from some of the most interesting, inspiring and insightful people I've met over the course of my career. Our guest on the pod today is the quite frankly fantastic Anne Sandig, currently a Senior Director of A&R at global publisher Cobalt. And as if that wasn't enough, she's also a songwriter and producer manager. With over 16 years working in music, mainly in publishing, but also on the label and agency side, Anne's knowledge and network is expansive and successes many. We're so excited that Anne's managed to take some time out of her hectic schedule to speak with us. Thank you so much for joining us, Anne. We're going to get into your career story shortly, but we like to warm our guests up with quick fire questions. Are you ready, Anne?
I'm ready.
Okay, let's go. Don't overthink it. What's the first album you bought?
I hate this question, but I actually don't remember. I do think it might have been a Nirvana record.
Nirvana's good. We'll go with that. We'll go with that. What was the first gig you went to?
Contrary to that, I went to the Backstreet Boys with my cousin.
Wow, that is full spectrum. Nirvana at one end, Backstreet Boys at the other. Love it. And what's the last show you went to?
I went to see Bruce Springsteen in the summer at Hyde Park.
Fabulous. And what's on repeat for you at the moment?
I'm listening to a lot of sort of like European dance music, like Peggy Goo, but also always go back to the classics like Elton John, and then the Olivia Rodrigo album that was out a couple of weeks ago, that I've been playing that a lot.
Wonderful. Love it. And finally, what's your dream lineup, past or present? So it can be anyone from any time. Dream lineup.
I guess I would just go with loads and loads of women. So I'd start with Haim, Rihanna, Dusty Springfield, maybe a bit of Taylor Swift in there as well.
That sounds like a fantastic lineup. I want to go to that show. Loving Dusty. I'm listening to loads of Dusty Springfield at the moment. What is that about? Anyway, amazing. Thank you so much, Anne. The next thing we're going to do is we're going to talk about your P's for the pod. So before we get stuck into your career story, when you kindly agreed to be on the show, I sent you a list of words to pick from, your P's for the pod, and you picked proactivity, people and passion. So what was it about those words that made you pick them?
So I've learned pretty quickly in this industry that if you're not proactive, you're not going to get anywhere. I think you have to go out there, meet people. You have to go out there and figure out what's new. You have to go out there and figure out where you want to fit in the industry. And then even once you're in a job, it's about, you know, like always offering help, like trying to shadow people in different departments, come up with new ideas of how to run a team. So I think being proactive and like not sitting on your ass is probably quite a good way to go really far in this industry.
I couldn't agree more with that. I love that answer, because being helpful is one of those things that's absolutely crucial. And I think sometimes, particularly if you're starting out and you're new and you're in an office and it's full of people you don't know and you're like, oh, I don't want to get in the way, you sort of minimize yourself and you hide behind your email, when actually probably one of the best things you can be doing is getting up from your desk, walking over to someone and saying, hey, I've finished that. Is there anything else I can help with? You know, it's a people business, which was your next P. So I'll hand over to you to tell me why you picked people.
So I think the music industry is all about the people around you. As it's, you know, another P, it's really good to find your pack, and that's your friends, that's your peers, that's the people you work alongside of. But I also think it's really good to have, you know, like some professional advice from lawyers or managers, like people that have done it for a long time. And I think the more people you have around you helping you, the more, you know, I think the more successful you'll get. And I've always been of the belief that, you know, the people you meet on the way up, like if you're a good person and you, you know, work with them well, like they'll also be there on the way down or when you're not the hottest thing around anymore.
Do you know what? That is such a good point. And I think we all talk about networking in the music industry, and it's like build your network. And I think often people can think that that means go to loads of events and introduce yourself to everyone, but it's not just that. Building your network, and I talk about building your network in one of my sessions, Prove Your Passion in Person. So many P's. I talk about building your network there. It is about having a broad range of people who you can talk to, who can talk to you, who can educate you, who you can learn from, and who you can hopefully in exchange teach them something as well. So, and I love the fact that you use the word pack. You said, you know, another word for people is pack, finding your pack. I completely agree with that as well. I think that's super, super helpful, Anne. Thank you. And then your final P, tell us about your final P. You picked passion.
So passion I picked because on one side, I think it's amazing that we can do a job that, you know, like for other people is just a passion. And a lot of people don't have that, aren't that lucky. But also you have to be really passionate to be in this job because it can be all consuming. It can be 24/7. It can eat into your evenings and weekends. And it can take a long time to get anything done, especially in the songwriter producer world that I've been working in. So being passionate and really, really caring, I think it's very important.
Yeah, agreed. It's one of those, passion is, I think proactivity and passion are the two P's that have come up most often when we've been recording this pod. And couldn't agree more. I think passion is important because it's beyond, I like music, you know, just being a consumer, like you said, it eats into your outside of working hours and often, and certainly depending on what role you do, but in a lot of roles in music, you're going to be working beyond the 9 to 5, you know, it's going to be going to gigs. It's going to be maybe potentially speaking to people in other time zones. So having that additional passion and that sort of commitment and determination and drive, they're all things that you need really to succeed, to go the extra mile. And that's something we talk about a lot as well, is going the extra mile, not just doing the bare minimum, but, you know, taking that extra step. What can you do to make it as good as possible or be as helpful as possible? So brilliant, amazing. So they are your three P's. We've got proactivity, people and passion, and no doubt we'll be coming back to those as we go through your career story. Tell me a bit about like how and when you came to realize that you could work in music or that the actual business side of music existed.
I'm actually from Germany, so I moved over here 20 years ago now, initially for like 6 months and ended up staying. Ended up studying media studies over here, which sort of like gave me a little bit of an insight of like what the music industry could potentially be like, but it was massively helpful. So then after uni, I thought, what's the kind of job or career or direction I could go into that I can see myself do for a long time and not just for the next few years. And music was always something that I just really was interested in. So I then just started looking into what jobs are out there. And at the time there was a music job website. I think it was called musicjobs.com. And I found a first job, which was in a music PR company. I was very much just stuffing envelopes with CDs at the time, inviting people to gigs, but therefore also got to go to a lot of live music, got to meet some managers, got to meet people in the industry. I did that for 6 months. And then from then on, there moved on to Atlantic Records, where I worked in the press department. And at the time still, because there was so much physical press, I just cut out articles of the artists they had signed there at the time and put them all in a book for them for the end of the week to see what kind of press was out about them. So I did that for 6 months. And then I actually heard about an internship or work experience for 2 months at Sony ATV Music Publishing was called at the time. And I didn't really know what music publishing was. I knew what Sony was, but not so much music publishing. But I applied. I went to meet the head of A&R there and he gave me the job. I started there for free. I worked for free for 2 months full time, so I had to have a couple of extra jobs on the side. And then after those 2 months, because he very much you know, saw me go the extra mile and help out and wanting to be there and stay as late as I can, they just then gave me a job and I ended up staying there for 4.5 years. And that was sort of my first introduction into, okay, this is what music publishing is like. This is what, you know, what songwriters and producers do. This is how you collect their money. this is other ways, like synchronization, this is other ways of making money for the songwriter. And from there, I actually then met my ex-colleague who was working for an American music management company, a songwriter producer.
Can I jump in and interrupt? Sorry, Anne. I think this is a really good place to pause. And actually, for anyone listening to this who doesn't understand or know, and there's no reason why you should, unless you work in music, understand the difference between the record side or the label side of things and the publishing side of things. So the way I tend to describe it is that the label side or the records side is about that recorded music. So the intellectual property is the physical recording of a song. And on the publishing side, it's about the songwriting and the actual song itself. Is that correct, Anne? And if it is or if it isn't, could you just go into a little bit more detail about what the publishing side entails?
I mean, that is pretty much correct. The way I always explain it, in the olden days, you would have sheet music of lyrics. So that would be what a songwriter or the artist would have written down, and that was the written song, and that is what the publishing share is decided on. And then once you record that music, once you have a master, that's what the record label will then release, and that's their side of the business. What I didn't really know when I got into publishing is, you know, there is obviously people that don't write their own songs. They can release a record on a record label, but didn't have to write it. So there's, you know, songwriters and producers out there that don't, that write just for other people or with other people. And that's something that I very much learned in that first job at Sony ATV.
Amazing. And that's, again, that's another really interesting point, because often I will be working with producer managers, so companies who do producer management rather than artist management. And often when I'm talking to candidates about roles, you know, everyone's heard of artist management, much like they've always heard of, you know, record labels. They've heard of record labels, they've heard of artist management. But when you start talking about producer management, they're like, oh, right, okay. So there are companies who specialize in managing producers rather than just managing the artists. So that's quite interesting as well for listeners to understand that, you know, there is artist management, but in the same respect that there's labels and publishers, there are artist management companies and producer management companies. Great. Amazing. Thank you, Anne. Well, I interrupted your flow of your career story just to nail down the difference between records and publishing. So I'm going to shut up now and let you carry on. Thank you.
No worries. I think that was needed. But leading on from your last point of producer management, that's what I ended up getting into next. So I then started working for an American company called AAM, and it was my colleague and I over here overseeing the European side of it, and it was very much focused on managing songwriters and producers and mixers. So very much all the people that make records sound good, and songwriters that write the lyrics for or with artists. And I ended up being there for 8.5 years actually. So a long time, and really like got to sign a few people that I kept, that I sort of brought from, you know, that I signed at the beginning, not doing very much, to like having massive hits globally. And that was a really, really good sort of like learning curve. Like, hey, I can work independently, because it was only two of us over here. But I also have to go back to my people and make sure that I'm proactive, and like going back to all the pieces, making sure that I just do the work for our clients. And then I had a baby 2.5 years ago. So I then left AM, went on maternity leave for a year, and then just over a year ago started at another music publishing company called Cobalt as a senior director. And again, working across the songwriter and producer roster there, I think it's just something that I have really very much enjoyed over my career, and I think I'm good at. And so that's where I'm at now.
Amazing. That's brilliant. Thank you, Anne. Can you tell us a little bit about what your day-to-day entails, like with the role that you do at the moment? Tell me what a senior A&R director does on a daily basis.
God, I think it's sort of quite different every day, but sort of, maybe I go over my weekly tasks. I think the main task is to make sure that I am in touch with all the record labels or the artist management companies to see which ones of their artists are currently in the studio, which ones of their artists are currently looking for outside songs. And then with that information, I would then, you know, go back to our songwriters, go back to our producers, or all the songs they've already sent in, because we do have a big big playlist of songs that haven't been cut yet, and which is sort of like connect the dots, I guess. I always call it, it's like it's almost like, you know, initially with setting up songwriting sessions, which means, you know, you get all the writers and producers and artists in the room together, it's a bit like blind dating, and you just have to figure out who your people are again. And some artists work with a lot of different ones, some artists only have one other writer or producer on the album, and then there's artists that don't need anyone else in the room. So that's part of it. I go to some gigs, you know, just to see, either see the people play that our writers and producers have songs released with, or to find some potential new talent. I go and meet with other managers and publishers just to figure out who they are working on their rosters, and again, matchmake our clients together. That's sort of it. We've got like a few sort of, you know, internal meetings where my team at Cobalt would just go over all the things happening this week, what our writers are doing. A lot of them travel to LA or Berlin or Nashville or Sweden for writing trips, so we help out with that as well. That's probably about it.
That's amazing. I love the fact that you describe yourself as a matchmaker. that's really, it's brilliant though, because it's your role, and it's great that you picked people, and I can understand why you picked people. Your role is so people focused, and it's really being knowledgeable of who's out there, who's doing what, you know. I suppose what's interesting to me is how you like representing, because essentially you're representing your songwriters, or your producers or your mixers. How do you match them to artists?
I think it's really all about the music, you know, and obviously music is very subjective, but I always think record labels will have an idea of what they want the next single or the next album of their artist to sound like. And I would then go and suggest these people off our roster that I think would be great for the job. And sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't. You know, there's always been disagreements, but sometimes it's a sort of curveball connections that work better than the ones that maybe were more obvious at the beginning. So it's really difficult to know how to answer this, but I think you just really have to know your clients and know what they want to do, what they're very good at. And then you just have to sort of like talk that through with the record label or the artist management company and figure out who to connect, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that does make sense. I tell you what would be super helpful, particularly for me, actually, because obviously I work on the business side of things and I recruit lots of roles for record labels. So whether that is marketing managers or PR people, or it could be work with artist management companies on management assistants or artist managers. It could be working with publishers, but if it is, often it's on like copyright and royalties side of things. But I have lots and lots of candidates who come to me who want to be producers or want to be songwriters, and they're like, Sylv, how do I do it? And I'm like, do you know what, I have no idea, because that doesn't fall into my specialism of the music business side of things. So what would be amazing, Anne, is if you can give our listeners any hints and tips if they want to be a producer, if they want to be a songwriter, what are the things they should be doing?
Okay, I think the first job for a producer is to find a studio or maybe another producer that they could work from or with, or at least learn from. I think a lot of the best producers have come through a studio setup, and studios do internships, and so they get into the studio environment. I think that's a very sort of like easy way of knowing if that's for you and trying it out. And it's not just London that has studios, it's like, you know, Manchester, like there's other cities where you can probably go and have a look around or see if you can do an internship at a recording studio, it's harder for a songwriter because your music needs to just sort of be heard by the right people, or you need to have your people around you. A lot of writers that I've worked with over the years have gone to specific music schools. There's one in Liverpool called Lipa. There is BIM, which is all over. There's a few of them all over. You'll probably know more, Sylph. You know, there is Brit School, but there's also schools in Scandinavia that big songwriters like Stargate have set up over there. And that would be a way into building your sort of like songwriter community and working with other people, because a lot of songwriters don't write 100% songs. I think they always would go into a writing session with other people, with a producer and an artist or another writer. That's normally the setup. And then I think it's just about like getting your music, once you have songs written or produced, get your songs heard and send them out to people. And sometimes that can just be a cold email. I get cold emails at Cobalt a lot. You know, I've found a couple of people like that over the years. It's about getting them to music lawyers, who are sometimes quite early on new clients, and then they can be on your team and get you out there. And I think that kind of information, I think it goes back to being proactive and like go and find some contacts, which, to be honest, the internet is really good with. And then just try and like have your music heard that way.
So you kind of need to be a bit of a salesperson for yourself, essentially. You need, that's where that proactivity is so crucial, because you can be the best songwriter in the world, but if you're just, if it's existing and staying in your four walls and your bedroom and it's not going out anywhere, you're not going to get to the next stage of the process. So if someone is sending like a cold email out, like what do they have to include in that? What should it be? Should there be like a bit of a blurb? Should it just be a link? Like, should it be a video? Like what should they include?
I think as a songwriter producer, it's always good to have, of course, a link of music, you know, a bit more explanation about their background, like a little blurb, a little bit of, you know, like why you want to be in music, who you've worked with, who, and sometimes all the thing is really good to have a wish list of people that you know you want to work with. That could be artists, that could be other producers, other songwriters, and just sort of, you know, some people will not open those kind of emails, but I think a lot of people do, and I think it's the only way of getting music to people. So it's just about like really figuring out like what are your 3 to 5 like best songs that best present what you do. And as a producer, that could be a really interesting sound that maybe isn't like anything, you know, I would have heard before. Or as a top liner, I always look for, or as a songwriter, I always look for interesting lyrics, or, you know, how have you set this in a different way to what's out there at the moment? Or are your melodies, you know, like really like different to anything I've heard? That's sort of like what I would then look for or listen to when I get demos sent to me, or these kind of cold emails.
Amazing, thank you. And what can people do beyond, you know, Googling and using LinkedIn to find out who the A&Rs are, who they need to be contacting at publishing companies? Do aspiring songwriters and producers need like an online presence as well?
I think so. I think nowadays it's good to have a presence online, because a lot of people, A&Rs, managers will check you out online. But I think the main thing is like try and see if there's events going on that you could meet people in person at. You know, like there is events like The Great Escape, which is more for artists, but there are so many managers, labels, lawyers, publishers there, that that's always a very good event to go to just meet people. And read some music press. You know, there's like Music Week online, there is Music Business Worldwide. There's like so many things online that you can sort of figure out like who the people are to connect with. And it only needs a few really to really sort of like be heard, or just like get some feedback on your music. I think that sometimes is what you need, because truth be told, it's not always that good. And I think, you know, you just need someone to tell you, okay, this could be a career for you, or maybe there's other ways to go for you.
Yeah, that feedback thing is really important, isn't it? I think, again, drawing a parallel with recruitment, it's like if you go in for an interview and you don't get the job, the thing that you really want is feedback to understand why you didn't. And often that feedback isn't forthcoming from employers, which is really unhelpful. And I guess that's something that if you're a songwriter, if you're a producer, you need to kind of be open to, is receiving that feedback, which might not always be what you want to hear. But I guess it's how you respond to that feedback. It's what you do with that feedback that's the most important thing. Well, that's been a really helpful journey through where you've been and where you are now. I guess what I'd love to know as well, what are the biggest challenges you've faced to date?
I think there's been a few over the years. You know, I think one of them is definitely that I always felt there's not enough female leaders to look up to, you know, and I sort of thrive of like looking up to people, learning from people, and I think it is getting better, but I think there still needs to be a lot more female leaders in the industry in general. The other thing is it's changing constantly. So since I started in publishing to now, it's, you know, things change all the time. At the moment, we're getting a lot of songs sent through with AI vocals on them, and then we as a publisher have to think like, how does this work in a publishing split, like what does this mean? So I think it is ever changing, and I think it's like trying to stay on top of everything, trying to stay on top of TikTok and all the new trends that are coming through. It's sometimes quite hard, and I think you just have to really get stuck in and like learn it. And then going back to, you know, it being a 24/7 job, like me being a new mom, it's hard sometimes to fit everything in and like to make sure that you are across everything at work, but also you are across your family life. I think can sometimes be quite difficult. Although I have to say, with Cobalt, they're being very flexible, and I don't feel like I've been put under pressure. But it's just the pressure I put myself under sometimes of like, you know, not having enough time to do everything.
I think that's really interesting. I mean, the first part that you said about not enough female leaders, yep, completely on board with that. Like there does need to be a better split across the board, and I think that's representation, you know, from every single angle just needs to be better. But that's something that we work towards every day. It doesn't happen overnight, and we're getting there slowly, but we are getting there. I think the points you made about, you know, being across everything, and whether that is, you know, social media and TikTok or your life, like it is such a tough one, isn't it? Because I know that for me, I on the social media side of things, I have a very, 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 very limited capacity to be a healthy human being, and because of how busy everyone is. I start every conversation, everyone's like, how are you? I'm like, I'm really busy. And I've got to stop saying that because everyone's busy. But it's about prioritising what's important. And to me, in what I do and in my life and for my own mental well-being, social media is not a priority for me. In my job, social media is something that I use to post, you know, vacancies that I'm working on. But beyond that, in my actual life, I don't really have the headspace for looking at social media because I don't particularly find it healthy for me. But completely understand that in other jobs, in other areas, like being across all that detail is really important. But I think it is important that prioritization is so important because you are not your career and you are not, you're not defined by one thing, whether it's your family or your job. It's, you know, you're you and you're doing the best you can every day. We all are. We're all doing the best we can, and some days are better than others. So I totally hear what you're saying about the overwhelm. Do you have any tips for how to get the balance, or is that, I mean, I guess that's something that we're all working towards every day, but have you got any tips, or has anything worked for you, or have you had any advice about how to manage it all?
It's a tough one. I mean, because I have to, you know, pick up my daughter 2 days a week from nursery. That day, my boundary is I have to leave work a little bit early. I have to go pick her up. I won't be around for course that evening. I think it's about you or me setting my own boundaries within my diary and just saying, I'm available here, I'm available there. The other thing someone a few years ago told me, like, people just book in meetings back to back, and that seems really busy and looks really good for your boss potentially, but you actually don't get anything done. It's like you don't actually get any breathing space after the meeting to think, well, what just happened, and digest it and follow up on stuff. So I very much am very aware of, like, you know, I schedule my own meetings, so I'm very much aware of, like, where they are. I've got time in between. So that's sort of like how I get some headspace in between as well. And then, to be honest, unless there's something very, very urgent or important, I have my weekends for me and my family. That doesn't happen all the time, but it has to be pretty urgent for me to do anything and leave my family for something to do with work.
100%, I agree with that. The weekends are the weekends. And unless it is like uber mega priority and everything's going to fall over, then I'm certainly not working weekends. I think that's just going back to the point you made about people who book back to back to back to back meetings. Like, I hear and see that all the time. It's really tough because, say, for example, in my role, a client might say to me, oh, can you speak to these 20 candidates today? And I'm like, no, I can't, because call number 20 is probably going to be about 5 minutes and I'm not going to know who the fuck I am if I've had to have 20, 30 minute interviews in a day, you know? So I think it is often, I suppose, the further down the line you get in your career, the more space you've got to say no to stuff. But I would just like reiterate your point is there will be times you've got to do back-to-back meetings, but what's the point in doing back-to-back meetings if you can't action the stuff that you've discussed in the meeting? So what I often try to do is, if I've got a 30-minute meeting, then I might have a 15 or 20-minute gap in my diary after that to digest, work out what my actions are, make sure I know what I'm doing before I move into the next meeting or onto my next call. It doesn't always work like that. If you're on a deadline, you know, there'll be some days, for example, when I start at 8 in the morning and I finish at 10 at night, and that's not healthy to do all the time. It's okay to do as a one-off every so often if it's particularly busy, but it is very much about building those boundaries into the contingency time for you, the planning time, the headspace in your diary on a daily basis, because otherwise you're not going to be operating at, you know, you're not going to be operating at your best if you're just feeling massively overwhelmed by stuff. What do you wish you'd known when you started out? Is there any like piece of advice that you wish you had that you want to impart on anyone starting out who's listening to us today?
I think one is just to be patient, you know, nothing's going to happen overnight. I think building up your contacts, building up your success, all of that can take time, and I think sometimes you expect it to happen overnight, and you're not going to get rich in music very quick either, but you can. So it's a very good industry to stay in, but it's definitely not one to get into to make a quick buck.
Yeah, that patience element, I think, is really, really crucial to know that it's going to take time, and yeah, just take a deep breath and keep going. Amazing. Brilliant. And is there anything you'd like to change in the music business?
We talked about it a little bit already. I definitely think we need more women in the music industry. I think it's frustrating when there is so many young female artists that only work with guys in the studio that have male A&Rs, have male publishers. I just think we just need to show more women that there is space for them in the industry. And then also on the songwriter producer side, there's a lot of songwriters that are women. There's not enough female producers. I'm lucky enough to co-manage one of them, which is amazing. And there is more and more coming through. But again, it's about showing young girls that that is a career path for them. And it's not you sitting in the studio and there's a guy there and they assume that he is going to be the producer because he is a man. So that's definitely something that I'm very much like hoping to change as well, and just like have more and more females in the studio mixing, producing, recording. So that I'm definitely very passionate about that. And it's not just about women.
I think it's about representation, isn't it? That is the main thing. It's that everyone feels represented and everyone has a voice and everyone's voice is heard, I think is really, really crucial. Well, it sounds like there needs to be some kind of joint DIY and sanding event for female producers. And I shall tap you up about that a bit later on. Yes, amazing. Please. I tell you what, I'm going to ask one final question before we go on to your charity or cause. When people are starting out, often, you know, they don't necessarily have the formal experience. So often I'll say to them, creating your own experience is great. You can put that on your CV, but don't forget about your behaviors and attributes and your qualities, because when you're starting out, like we've spoken about proactivity and we've spoken about passion and we've spoken about being helpful and, you know, going the extra mile, we've spoken about all those things, they're just as important as your experience, or can be just as important as your experience when you're starting out. What qualities, behaviors and attributes do you think are crucial to do a job like yours, whether that's producer management or whether it's the A&R on the publishing side of things?
I think on one side, you have to be a people person. You have to get on with people. You have to understand their nuances. You know, you will work with some more difficult people. You have to figure out how to handle them and how to make sure that they are looked after, but also that they're put in their place if they need to be. I think it's really good to be organized and make sure, especially as a manager and a writer, producer, publisher as well, you have to be organized to make sure that you're across everything you need to be on. Make sure that your clients have all the information they need for their songwriting sessions or their travel they're taking to other places. And I just think it's really good to be able to speak to any different kind of person. And that could be one of your peers, that can be a CEO of a company. I think it's really good to be able to chat with each of those kind of characters and get some information from them that might help you in your career.
So in each episode, we'll be making a donation to a cause we care about on behalf of our guests. So tell us who or what you've picked and why.
I've chosen an organisation called Small Green Shoots, which helps kids from lower income backgrounds into the music industry. And I've come across them first through our scout at Cobalt, Zach, who was a shoot and came through them. And I just think it's a really good organisation of like allowing different kind of people to come into music. Nats, who founded it, is a good friend of mine. And I just think it's a really good cause to help make this industry more diverse and represent different voices.
Yeah, Nats is an absolute legend and a force of nature. What a woman. And Small Green Shoots are amazing. I'm super chuffed that you've picked them, man. That is really great. And I always say to Nats, like, if you've got any great shoots, send them my way, because they're such a great bunch. They do such amazing work. So thank you so much for picking Small Green Shoots, Anne. That's amazing. Thank you so much, Anne, for joining us today. That was super helpful. That was really interesting. You've given us some really valuable insight into how it works on the publishing side and what songwriters and producers need to be doing. And you've given us a great insight into your career. So thank you so much. We really, really appreciate your time. Thank you so much, Anne Sandig.
Thanks for having me.
So that's it for another episode. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget to like, subscribe and follow the BIY pod. And you can follow us on our socials as well. So we're at biy.people.and.talent on Instagram. And if you've got any burning questions, you can email them to us at hello@biypeople.co.uk with BIY pod in the subject line. And a big thank you to our super producer, Scarlett O'Malley, for being an all-round legend. This podcast was brought to you by BIY People and Talent to help you believe it yourself, build it yourself, and be it yourself.